telling that we need to go ahead, so we have to be, I don't like saying, but other people say business like, meaning that we have to be very, very effective and efficient in both our presentation and in our discussion. Something that is a really up of our hands. We had planned to finish at 1, but this venue is supposed to be used at 12. The memorial service of one of our members who passed on. So this is the only big enough venue to hold the memorial service. So I am going to start now with the apologies. We only received a 4 apologies. The minister is landing this morning. She's probably will join us in the course of the discussion. The minister of environment and affairs. And the minister of public enterprises has apologized. And the DG has also tendered her apology. DG of environmental affairs. So those are the only, the deputy minister, my apologies, the deputy minister has also apologized that she won't be able to be with us. So those are the only apologies that we have received. I see all the members are here, that is those who consistently attend this meeting. Are we ready? We are going to start with the Department of Environmental Affairs, and then later on, after them, we will get ESCOM to do the presentation, after which we will then allow engagement, questions, and discussion. We just, as a way of background, we thought that we needed to get briefing from both the department and ESCOM on renewable energy. As part of the discussions that we are having in preparation for the COP22, we, as you know, that South Africa is part of the so-called 2015 UN Paris Agreement that was approved in Paris last year. And that agreement requires that all the countries who are signatory to that agreement must do certain things to respond to the climate change agenda. So we have been looking in our own country, engaging, and we thought that we needed to start with ESCOM. We have organized a colloquium also on Friday, which will begin to unpack the state of readiness of our country to respond to this question. So we have identified ESCOM to begin to engage with them as to what will be their contribution, particularly in relation to the Independent Power Producer Program, which it's one of the programs that responds to the question of clean energy. How far are we, to what extent is that going to contribute towards the reduction of the emissions? Of course, the department is the responsible department that guides us in this process. Program also invited them to make a contribution. Of course, because we don't engage with the ESCOM, they don't normally form part of our committee. When is the time to make a presentation, we will request that I see the chairperson is here. I'll request the chairperson to do the introduction of if there are other members of the board who are here, and the executive chief will request that we do that. But for now, let's get the Department of Environment and Affairs to start with the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Judy Beaumont. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Climate Change and Air Quality Management in the Department of Environment Affairs. My colleague is Deborah Rana Lopez. She's the Chief Director responsible for emission reduction in the branch, and she will take us through the presentation. Honourable Chair, I think just to add to your introduction, as you said, South Africa has made and presented its intended national determined contribution to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change as part of the lead up to the negotiations last year of the Paris Agreement. As Honourable Chair and Honourable Members are fully aware, the Paris Agreement is moving swiftly into entry into force. As part of the readiness and as part of the implementation program, South Africa is putting in place a national emission reduction system, a national greenhouse gas emission reduction system. Renewable energy and a reducing of emissions from the power sector is a really critical contribution towards reducing South Africa's overall emissions. So Deborah would take us through the presentation and we would be ready to answer any questions. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Thanks, good morning, Honourable Members. I want to take you through a presentation on the South Africa's emission reduction system and touching a bit on the IPP program. In 2015, which is last year, Cabinet approved South Africa's emission reduction system framework, which has already been implemented. We've introduced the system in a phased approach. And some of the key elements of the system include carbon budgets for companies, desired emission reduction outcomes for sectors, and the pollution prevention plan for companies that have been allocated carbon budgets. And then that also includes the reporting system to report all projects and emission reduction programs in the country, and then a variety of other measures, including the draft carbon tax bill, which has been circulated to stakeholders for comment, and I'll talk to that a little bit later. The system was introduced in phases. We have started implementing phase one, which started this year, 2016 up to 2020. It's a 5-year period. And the first phase is the voluntary phase, which is more like a trial phase. And then the second phase is the post-2020 phase, will only be implemented in 2021. And it will require a climate change response legislation for us to be able to enforce some of the elements that's highlighted earlier. We are also in the process of developing the emission reduction system for the second phase, so that when we get to 2021, we are ready with the implementation. This is basically an organized structure that looks at different components of the system and how do they relate to each other. As I indicated, the previous elements that I've highlighted are some of the elements that form the climate change emission reduction system as prescribed in the National Climate Change Response Policy. As Julie indicated, this system is one of the key components basically that will help us achieve our commitment in the Paris Agreement. Phase one, as I said, was approved in 2015. We completed the mitigation potential analysis, which basically looked at what is possible in different sectors in terms of emission reduction. That process was completed in 2014. It was a multi-stakeholder process. It included businesses, it included NGOs, it included government departments, academia, and research organizations. And that process was informed by the IRP 2010, which is the electricity plan for the country. So basically, the electricity potential was constrained as per the IRP 2010. And then since then, we have initiated the process of setting carbon budgets. We've thus far completed about 18 carbon budgets, as from included in the 18. And there will soon be drafts in pollution prevention plans, which is basically mitigation plans that tells us how are they going to reduce their emissions to be able to achieve their carbon budget. And then from there, on an annual basis, companies will be required to report to the department to tell us exactly how are they doing in terms of meeting the carbon budget. And then we will assess compliance. There's no compliance mechanism in the first phase, as I've indicated, is the voluntary phase. And hopefully we'll have legislative basis for the second phase so that we can have a compliance mechanism for the post-2020 period. And then for the second phase, we have initiated the process of updating the mitigation potential analysis. Although it would have been good to have the IRP update finalized first before we finalize the mitigation potential analysis. And then we have initiated the process of looking at the methodology and the approach for the second phase, which is going to be the mandatory phase. And then we hope to allocate carbon budgets soon to give companies some space to prepare for the implementation phase in the post-2020 period. And then they will be required again to submit mitigation plans. And then they'll have to report on an annual basis. These are the key mitigation factors. The mitigation potential analysis was looked at in the five key sectors. The energy sector, one of the sub-sectors there being the electricity sector, the transport, waste, carbon sinks, and industry sectors. We've also developed the desired emission reduction outcomes in sectors based on the five key sectors. Some of the mitigation potential of renewables in the MPA, which is what I refer to as the mitigation potential analysis document that was completed in 2014. It basically shows that what we've done marginal abatement cost caps for the short term, medium term and long term, which is the 2020 period, the 2030 and the 2050 period. And it shows, if you look at particularly when you look at the wind potential in 2020 there, you have, in terms of emission reduction, about 12,000 tons, and then the capacity there, you're looking at 5,600 megawatts. And then it goes on for the next 30 years, basically. The emission reduction system, the design document for carbon budgets, was consulted with all relevant stakeholders and it was adopted by all who participated in the process. And then as I've said, the common budget has been finalized for 18 companies. We're still engaging with other companies to finalize their common budget, even though there's a few that we've said no to as we couldn't agree on the data. We currently rely heavily on companies to submit emissions data to us for us to be able to allocate common budget. And if that includes their production data as well. We had a criteria that shortlisted over 60 companies for the first phase, but we have since received requests from other companies who are outside the criteria, who are representing carbon budgets. And once we finalize your carbon budgets, you'll be expected to submit a pollution prevention plan. We finalize the pollution prevention plan regulations. They will be promulgated soon. We've now incorporated all the comments that we've received from stakeholders. And if you look at the interface of carbon budgets and carbon tax, in the current carbon tax design, we've added another 5% tax allowance to any company that has a carbon budget. So you don't even have to meet your carbon budget. As soon as you get your carbon budget finalized, then you get an additional 5% tax allowance, which basically reduces your tax liability. That's for the current phase. We're still working on the interface for the post-2020 period. I'm sure it's going to be different from what we have at the moment. The as I've indicated, phase two will require a legal basis for us to be able to enforce the carbon rights allocated to companies. And then the key elements, and I'll talk to that when I get to the next slide. Well, that's a very big slide, and hopefully you can see. If you look at step one, extreme left at the top, that's the greenhouse gas inventory. You know that the latest version that we have is the 2010 greenhouse gas inventory, which has been peer-reviewed and submitted to the UNFCCC. And then the inventory also informs the mitigation potential analysis. And we will be undertaking a major update of the mitigation potential analysis in 2018. And then companies will be allocated carbon budgets. And then from there, they'll be required to submit their mitigation plans. We will also be doing, in step five, the DERO, the desired emission reduction outcomes, which is basically your sectoral target for different sectors. We're looking at different options as to who do we allocate the sectoral targets to. And that's part of the development of the mitigation system for phase two. Okay, the next slide, it's high level information on the renewable energy development, particularly when it comes to the IPP. As we all know, this is public knowledge that South Africa has significant soil and wind resources. And we also have seen from the IEIPP program that the technology costs have dropped dramatically, particularly for solar PV and wind. And at the bottom, the last few bullets there summarizes the renewable energy implementation program since 2011, which shows how much has been allocated in the procurement of all the big windows, which is about 8.1 gigawatts, and approximately 2.5 of that is operational. And I'm sure it's more than this. This is the latest figures that we got from the IPP office, and they are currently updating those figures. And the percentage contribution to the electricity supply in 2014, we contributed about 1% of the electricity supply, and then in 2015, contributed 2% into the electricity supply, which basically avoided, when you look at the 2015 numbers, they basically avoided about 3.3 million tons of CO2. In the atmosphere, and then the first half of 2016, PVN wind contributed about 2.2% electricity supply. And the 2015 numbers also saved about 3.2 million liters of water. The next slide is a summary of publicly available information based on the IPP reports, which was released on the 31st of March. These are the capacities that have been allocated in different big windows. That's the continuation of the capacities. If you look at small renewables, for instance, what has been allocated thus far for the first stage and for the second stage and window 3 in terms of small renewables. Okay, this is the last slide. This is an analysis that was done by the CSIR, basically using the data from the IPP program, which basically shows the average tariff drop of solar PV and wind. And if you look at, for instance, at the April 2016, that's row number 6, bid window 1, which basically the cost was about 3.65, and if you look at the price, as we speak now, about 6.62 for solar PV, which is basically about 80% in price drop for solar PV. And if you look at the same for wind, it's about 60% drop in average tariff for wind. So this shows that the prices have dramatically dropped in the PV and wind. Okay, and then the energy production from the IEIPP, the energy producers supply to the grid, which is about 5,000 gigawatt hour, and then the emissions avoided is about 8.4 million tons CO2 equivalent. That's about it.
Thank you very much for the presentation.
Just
spoke about the IP office, is it not idea? IP office, IPT.
No.
Why is it house?
Energy department.
Okay. And then Ministry of Determination?
That's the Ministry of Energy.
Thank you very much. Any addition to this?
Honourable Chair, I think just to add is that the emission reduction options in the power sector are absolutely critical for South Africa's overall ability to reduce our carbon emissions and to transition to a lower carbon economy over time. If we are not able to reduce emissions in the power sector, the rest of the economy has to take deeper action. So I think just to emphasize the importance of the power sector, which is really the sector that generates, because of the dependence on, at the moment, on coal-based energy generation, is the sector that produces the most greenhouse gas emissions.
Thank you very much, Gina. Can we get the first one?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to, well, I'm Bonjour Ngubane, Chairperson of ESCOM. I represent the board at this presentation. I would like to apologize for our group chief executive. He had to go with some other agent business. The chief financial officer, Mr. Arnold Singh, is here as the senior person from ESCOM. I would ask him to introduce the executive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, and members. Good morning. Yeah, excuse me.
Good morning, Chair. It's Mandy Rambros. I'm the climate change manager at ESCOM.
Can I come again?
Yeah, quick.
Apologies, Chair. Mandy Rambros. I'm the manager for climate change and sustainable section in ESCOM. Sustainable development.
Good morning, Chair and members. Shostak Church, my name. The Virginia Authority for Corporate Affairs. Good morning, Jim. Sean Lewis. I'm the Group Executive for IT System.
Group Executive for us?
IT.
Okay.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Willy Majora. I'm a Senior General Manager in Generation ESCOM.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Members. I'm Daniel.
Good morning, my name is Leo Cavini. I'm the Senior General Manager in Transmission and Sustainability.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Craig Indow. I'm the Division Executive Strategic Support in the Office of the Chief Executive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable Chair. That's the introduction.
Mr. Chair, the next slide basically looks at
impact the renewables contribution to emission avoidance. So basically, in line with the information presented by the department, we concur with the relative information that has been shared with the committee this morning by the department. We've just expressed it a little differently in terms of percentages, as you can see. In 2013-14, a relatively low level of contribution of the REIPP program to carbon emission avoidance at 0.6%. That grew to 1.8% in 2014-15, 2.7% in 2015-16, and year to date we have recorded a 1.5% contribution of the REIPP program. These numbers, the 2016 numbers are to September. So basically, if you double that for the full year, you get to about a 3% contribution for the full year. Mr. Chair, we would, however, like to point out that the growth in these numbers is obviously in line with the growth in the REIPP program, as undertaken by the Department of Energy. And it's also reflective of a very low load factor of traditional renewables projects of around 30% versus the additional load factors that we see in baseload capacity, for example, coal baseload fees, is basically around 75-78% coverage. Mr. Chair, the impact that we draw would like to draw the committee's attention to is that the emissions from electricity generation for those 3.5 years in question have been 669 million tons, on average about 223 million tons per year. The REIPP emissions avoided was about 11.4 million tons for that equivalent period. And ESCOM's renewable energy emissions avoided, with these are the renewable energy programs that ESCOM itself runs, was about 3.4 million tons. So in total, between the REIPP program as well as ESCOM's renewables projects, we've been able to avoid about just under 15 million tons of carbon emissions through this process. Renewables contribution to emission avoidance, Mr. Chair, is relatively small, as you can see, of 11.4 million tons of a possible 223 million tons, or actually 669 million tons for that 3-year period. And it comes with a relatively significant price tag, notwithstanding the decline in unit cost of electricity that we've seen in the slides from the Department of Environmental Affairs. The total cost of the REIPP program to the economy currently is sitting at about 1.1 million, which is the cost of the contracts of the PPA, of the power purchase agreement that ESCOM has signed with the independent power producers for the next 20 years. ESCOM's capital cost as it relates to these REIPP programs currently sits at about 28 million. We also like to point out, Mr. Chair, that this does not include the cost associated with base load required to back up renewables. Because at this stage, Mr. Chair, you will appreciate that wind and solar are basically intermittent. So when the sun shines, we have electricity. When it doesn't, we don't have electricity. And to the extent that we don't have electricity at that point in time, there needs to be a backup capacity that is provided to be able to ensure security of supply of energy. And that is where the base load fleet of ESCOM actually plays that role in terms of that. And that's not costed into the numbers that you're actually seeing in terms of the cost of these renewable programs. Mr. Chair, having said what we said about the renewables program and the REIPP program, if you look at ESCOM's cost in terms of ensuring compliance to COP 21 and other lists, it's also significant. In the next, the amount that we budget for to ensure emissions reductions and upgrades to our plant is around 63 billion rand. FGD is fuel gas desulfurization at Madubi. You will see that Kusile is not there because Kusile actually has it as part of its budget. So it can be fitted as part of the program, whereas Madubi will be retrofitted, hence we present Madubi separately. Low NOx burners at three stations,
FFP is at 2.5 stations and ESP I agree is at 4.5 stations. Mr. Chair, the full compliance including refitting all of the stations with some of that type of technology will cost in excess of 300 billion rand. So from that perspective, Mr. Chair, the cost of compliance is relatively high. Whether we go with the renewables route or whether we go with the ESCOM route, it's a significant cost associated with it. Thank you. Mr. Chair, in terms of how ESCOM fits into the overall strategy associated with our movement as a candidate, as you can see, we have two line graphs. The first one is basically the national range or what we have committed to in terms of the corporate market commitment as a cancer. And then we also depict on the same graph what the ESCOM budget for or the historical ESCOM budget for carbon emissions is. And as you can see, that ranges from about just under 200 million tons to just over 300 million tons, depending on which year you actually look at that in. But currently, on average, we have about 44.5% of the total budget available to the country. And I think, Mr. Chair, for us, it is important to confirm that currently we are within the allocated ranges, and therefore we are compliant with ESCOM to our budget. The range, Mr. Chair, has been... ESCOM contributes about 41.5% to the national greenhouse gas emissions. Okay, Mr. Chair, if we take the greenhouse gas emissions that we, as ESCOM contribute or generate, we've been allocated 44% of that total budget that the country is committed to. So if we produce about 223 million tons per annum, the country will basically be at about 500 million tons per annum. So our portion of that 500 million tons is the 44%. As I said, Mr. Chair, ESCOM is currently compliant, which is the third bullet point. I think the important point, Mr. Chair, that we would like to highlight here is that in order for ESCOM to be compliant in future, ESCOM needs to identify zero emitting energy options. So, as you highlighted on the previous slide, Mr. Chair, the zero emitting options are relatively, we'll cover that in the next slide, so we'll see what those options are. This has the added benefit of decoupling emissions growth from economic growth. What we've seen historically is that with large economic or significant increase in economic growth, there is a significant increase in emissions as well because of the impact of industrialization. So identifying zero emitting energy options has the added benefit that you actually get industrialization without the consequent impact of or negative impact of additional greenhouse gas.
Yeah, you know, some of this concept you must just unpack that one question. One should appreciate that not all of us are experts in the field of generation of electricity.
Sure.
So I like simplicity. Not that this concept must not be presented as they are, but you must be able to explain them so that members can understand what it means. What does it mean? Especially the last bullet point. I don't even want to read that bit.
Because
I may expose myself. Can you please explain this concept as you proceed with your presentation?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I think if you look at the last bullet point, maybe let me start with the second last bullet point. In order for ESCOM to be compliant in the future, ESCOM needs to identify zero emitting energy options. So, Mr. Chair, if you look at the graph, right up until 2035, we are relatively saying that the core baseload fleet that we currently have, together with the renewables program that has been spoken about by the department, should be able to enable ESCOM to comply with its offering requirements. When you then see that significant dip in the graph from 2035 onwards, that is where the
And that's where we're saying, Mr. Chair, that there is a need for us to start thinking now, how will we identify and implement zero emission energy options? So basically, in order for us to make that graph go down, as required by the Paris Agreement, we have to start discussing and implementing zero emitting energy options now. Okay. And zero emitting energy options will be things like hydro, low emitting like gas, wind, solar, nuclear, and those type of options. So those are zero emitting or low emitting carbon options. Those will have to form part of the energy mix going forward for us to see that declining trend beyond 2035. Else, the 2035 requirement around the carbon emissions going down per what we committed in the Paris Agreement will not be achieved. So that's the fourth point. The first bullet point, Mr. Chair, where we talk about this has an added benefit of decoupling emissions growth to economic growth, is explained as follows. Mr. Chair, the country is looking to increase economic growth to deal with the socio-economic problems of the country. In striving towards achieving an increase in economic growth, what we've seen historically is that economic growth or an increase in economic growth or an increase in economic activity comes about as a result of increased industrialization. So there's more factories, there's more economic activity, more stuff gets produced. When that happens, what we've seen in the past is that is, has a direct consequence on the amount of emissions that get generated. Because of the higher industrialization and higher economic activity, there are higher emissions that happen. So when we are saying that the energy mix going forward has to be a lower emitting or a zero emitting energy option like hydro, nuclear, gas, renewable, you will have the economic growth that we aspire to us, but the energy that will support that economic growth doesn't come from your traditional high emitting energy sources like coal and so on and so forth. Because traditionally that's how industrialization has been fueled. It's been fueled by energy, and the energy has been obtained from the traditional coal-fired power stations. So what we're saying now is that if we're going to go towards striving for economic growth as well as low emissions, then the logical conclusion is that we would then have to look at the energy mix, and the energy mix will have to basically be lower emitting or zero emitting energy solutions, which as I'm explaining is either renewables, gas, hydro, nuclear, and the like. Mr. Chair, if we then go on to the next slide. I think we also identified some of the impacts of climate change commitments. South Africa has a commitment emphasized by the country's vulnerability to extreme weather, example drought. So again, Mr. Chair, in this case, again, if we do see that we are saying we're going towards lower emitting options, and we're saying that one of those options is hydro, we have to take into account the fact that we are susceptible to drought. So hydro may not be the most logical option for us in terms of the lower emitting energy options. South Africa's commitment is cognizant of economic growth and poverty eradication. So again, what we're saying is that when we look at complying with our commitment under the Paris Agreement, we have to take account of the fact that we are aspiring towards a higher trajectory of economic growth in order for us to be able to address the socio-economic issues of the country. Energy mix selection, Mr. Chair, electricity generation technology choice is an important consideration, example nuclear, and this is where we explain the lower emitting or zero emitting options in the energy mix. An added benefit for us, Mr. Chair, is that coastal sited nuclear, so that means if you have
would be ideal for it to be located closer to the sea, because of the added benefits of using seawater for cooling, because nuclear plants require a vast amount of water for cooling, reduces the need for scarce freshwater resources. So by virtue of the fact that we have, I think, about 3,000 or 4,000 kilometers of coastline, that's an added benefit if we decided to consider for a program of nuclear energy. The other benefit is that the heat that we generate from nuclear plants can be used for freshwater augmentation or desalination. So what that means is that when you put a nuclear plant close to the sea, there's obviously seawater that can be used to cool the plant, but the heat that's generated from the same plant can actually be used to take the same salt water and actually take the salt out and actually create fresh water. And that's the process of desalination. So you're actually in the process of also, if we do go for a zero emitting energy source like nuclear, you also have the ability to ensure not only energy security, but you also have the ability to contribute towards reducing the risk of water security in the country. South Africa's commitment to the Paris Agreement was also conditional on funding support. If you look at the details around the Paris Agreement, Mr. Chair, you will find that the developed countries have committed to provide about $100 billion worth of financial support to developing countries to ensure their compliance to the Paris Agreement. Mr. Chair, we thought that it would be interesting just to share some current and future initiatives around carbon emissions that ESCOM has undertaken. Would we consider supercritical plants that is higher efficiency translates into lower emissions? Mr. Chair, would we consider basically that means they are relatively new technology that we've implemented in the consider, they're not the old technology that we use in the old power stations. So they should be much more efficient in terms of their emissions, in terms of carbon emissions. Energy efficiency programs, these are the solar water heaters, the light bulbs, the different light bulbs that we use in our houses. PV augmentation at existing coal plants and buildings. We have our own wind farms check, the Syrian wind facility. It's a 100 megawatt facility that is currently operational. Hydroelectrical plants at four locations, Mr. Chair, these are all ESCOM operated and owned assets, and obviously the Kugel Power Station, which is the only nuclear facility on the Ashland Council. Mr. Chair, some future initiatives that ESCOM is currently exploring. As you can see, we split them into lower emission technologies, which means that they are emissions, but they are lower than your traditional coal emitting technologies. And then we have zero emitting technologies. Zero emitting technology basically means, Mr. Chair, that when you're in the process of generating electricity, it actually emits zero carbon emissions. So on the lower emission technologies, Mr. Chair, what we currently exploring is conversion of open cycle gas turbines to combined cycle gas turbines. So basically, instead of burning diesel, for example, we convert them to actually burn diesel or gas, as the case may be. Cross-border gas. I think there's again, the Mozambique gas field available for us. So that is something that we're looking at. Underground coal gasification, and I will ask one of my colleagues to explain what that is all about. Microgrids, Mr. Chair. Microgrids is basically, if you take a community, there is an opportunity to create an electricity grid just for that community. So it's aiding one energy security, but also electrification. So for example, you can put rooftop solar PVs and solar panels for a very small community that allows them to access that electricity. Smart grids, Mr. Chair. Again, that would require some investment, but we're looking at technology that enables less line losses. So, Mr. Chair, currently, because of the vast distances over which electricity actually has to travel, the fact that it actually travels those distances means that actually electricity gets lost in charging. So there's new technology that actually now reduces those losses. So to the extent that we don't incur those losses, we won't have to generate the electricity. And not generating the electricity means that we actually don't have to then incur the emissions. So it's a much more efficient way of transporting the electricity and therefore reducing the generation requirements. On the zero emission side, Mr. Chair, the new clean renewables, I think that's been discussed quite extensively in the press and the like. So we won't spend too much time on that. Cross-border hydro, and again, that's relatively the Grand Vienna project and those type of projects that we currently have. So, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, we just like to confirm that Eskom is currently compliant in respect to its CO2 emissions and budgets and compliance requirements. The renewable or RDIPP program has had minimal impact on reducing emissions and at a significant cost to the economy, but we do confirm that it has had an impact on reducing emissions. The minimal impact of the RDIPP program means a zero carbon emitting baseload option is required. This is what I've explained before in terms of saying zero emitting is either hydro or nuclear or some sort of baseload option. When we say baseload, Mr. Chen, we mean that the energy associated with that solution is not interruptible. So for example, wind is interruptible. You only get energy from wind when the wind blows. You only get electricity from solar when there is no cloud. So we need a baseload solution that allows energy to be available 24/7, 365, that will enable energy security for the country. So in final conclusion, Mr. Chair, Eskom will support government ratification of the Paris Agreement, but again, this is dependent on us moving towards some form of zero emission based option in the future. As you will know, on one of the graphs that we presented, that beyond 2035, there is a requirement on the country to significantly reduce carbon emissions in real terms. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, CFO. Any addition, Chairperson?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members, and our department and officials from Environmental Affairs. We take the issue of climate change very seriously, as well as the issue of adhering to our commitments made at the Paris conference and which will be probably ratified at COP22. We hope that the country will sign the COP22 agreement or commitment by 3rd of November so that we remain a player in the bigger parties and groupings relating to discussions on climate change. We are still at a stage where countries must submit their proposals with modifications that may be necessary in order to fit into the final phase of decline. While we are at the peak as well as the plateau level, the inevitable phase of decline, which will be definitive of the succession to the Kyoto Protocol in its fullness, needs that we have mechanisms to effect zero carbon emissions. The renewable energy scenario is important in terms of the energy mix, but it is not a condition for zero emissions, because invariably, even with the IPPs of solar and wind, you still need baseload generation. And for us, at the moment, the only reliable baseload has been nuclear and coal. So however much we may like to promote renewables, we have the problem that storage of that energy from renewables
is very limited and very costly. Give you an example, Chairperson and honorable members. And a determination was made for 100 megawatts of concentrating solar power. That means building solar tanks, I mean tanks with salt, with the heat of the sun concentrated on this tank, gets liquefied and it creates a store for the sun's energy. At night, when the sun is no longer there, you can release this energy and continue to produce electricity. But this produces only 100 megawatts. And the total cost of it is 12 billion rand. So we have said to the minister, we need to revisit this issue, because 68 billion rand can give us Kusile, can give us Medupi, but 12 billion rand just for 100 megawatts is irrational. So these are the discussions we are trying to move forward with the Department of Energy, that promote renewables, but don't let the culture in the media and in the country say renewables can be the whole solution. It's impossible. If we do that, we'll have to spend a trillion rand or even more, but for very few megawatts. That is not going to sustain new smelters, new factories, and all the things we need to do to grow the economy in the country. So we are asking for cooperation among all departments, the people of South Africa, to see what it takes to come to zero emissions in a sober, clear, understandable way. That is what is called missions, and we hope that your committee will help us achieve that.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Board. I must welcome the Minister. You're welcome, Minister Molero. Fresh from Morocco, Marrakesh. Morocco is very near to the school of Scotland. Yes, it's today. But we are welcome, Minister. We were engaging with ESCOM, the Department of the contribution of the independent power producer program on the reduction of emissions as part of our contribution towards the Paris Agreement. So that's where we are now. So you are welcome to participate and interact with the discussion on our comments. We do have a limitation of time. We'll book this venue until at least 1 or after 1, but it's going to be a memorial service in the 12th. So we only have not sufficient time, but 1 hour to engage. Because at half at 11 we must take a briefing on the second quarter of the department. So honorable members, that's the presentation. I think, Chair, you have made very good input. I would have loved that to be in your presentation. Because actually, the main issue around the rethinking on this program is what you have just articulated now, which is what should have been on the presentation. Because we did interact with this thing through the media, and that's why we said let's engage to find out, because our understanding is that this is a country's commitment, the renewables, towards the reduction of emissions. So we were a bit worried when there was this change of policy and approach towards this, and that's why we needed to engage. And I thought that should have been somehow the context of appreciate the input. All of the members, that minister, I don't know whether you want to say something before we engage get the members to engage with the two presentations. I know that she came a bit late. You missed the presentation from the department. But if you want to say something.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and the leadership from ESCOM, our other Honourable Members, and our guests. Good morning. As you say, I had actually apologized for a little bit later either. I'm also going to upfront submit another apology. Because I've got to run into the next select committee meeting in no time from now. So I am going to try and be very, very brief. You did say that the department has presented. I have not missed. I'm part of writing that this presentation. It's other voice that I've missed, and I know exactly what's in the content of that is actually the finance. It was being presented on my behalf as well. I just thought that Honourable Members, I should make a few preliminary comments regarding process. It's a procedure matter, process matter. I do participate in the economic cluster of cabinet. We also have discussed a matter of renewable energy and possible, not possible, what may sound like policy change in a cabinet level. So just for information, we have been directed at some, I think, four departments. Energy, public enterprises, ourselves, and science and technology to sit and have a discussion on this matter of the renewable and what sounds like or appears like a policy change. So I'm saying here that Honourable Members, we will then have to still come back with the report arising from that, because we also have to take, let me set down the four departments of resources. We have to come back to cabinet as well as to yourselves, because there are issues that we need to iron. So that is a process matter. That would be my preliminary comment. The second thing is that we have found it necessary and indeed very prudent that our minister, through Minister UKME, Minister Brown, we work with ESCOM directly. And the whole point here is that we are planning to have with Mr. Mubani, Dr. Mubani, a meeting when he told that he's coming to Morocco, so we will meet somewhere in Morocco, we'll also meet with the leadership to just walk ourselves through these processes and programs so that we all better understand where each one of us comes from and engage on this matter. So there are those two process matters that we are owing one another a discussion on. So my idea here will be some preliminary remarks on the presentation, but please do take note that they are going to be so good at political level, so that I don't sound like we are just having a responsibility here. I am going to ask the chair that through you I gag and guillotine my chief. Yes. Therefore, so I'm really requesting that we make this preliminary request and discussion need. Why I'm saying so is because of these such elements that I think from our side, I'll do this with comments that have been in the report earlier on. I mean, later on. Firstly, on the presentation, and of course, I'm saying the guillotine is because on the day before the fact that we still have to engage with the society. On the presentation itself, I think just on details, there's a slide somewhere there. Unfortunately, we don't have slides, Chair. And we also don't have one of the structure. We also don't have the pages on the slides. But it's a slide that talks to...
From the department?
No, from ESCOM.
Okay.
ESCOM, ESCOM. If we could just go through it, it's a slide that was showing almost... It has something to do with poverty, the condition, the consideration by ESCOM. That there is a... Is somebody trying to take that?
Yeah,
it's a slide that talks to consideration for poverty and economic growth.
Yeah, it's the South African climate change commitment.
Yes, the
climate
change and commitment.
Yeah.
But it's that one. If you see that third block of things, it talks about, I think it's the second block. No? It talks about the considerations that are made for economic growth and poverty. We'd like to make a request that that slide talks to, yeah, it's South Africa, the third block, South Africa climate change, South Africa commitment to provide the country vulnerable to extreme weather, it is targets of oil, South Africa commitment is focused on economic growth and poverty eradication. We must have the, especially for businesses at the heading on climate change, something that has to climate change or environmental consideration. We subscribe as a country to sustainable development. Sustainable development has got three pillars. It's people who are, in this instance, being referred to as a poverty eradication for the people. We also would like to have economic growth, but the third pillar is within here, which is an environmental consideration. So every time in South Africa, because this is a policy matter which we can't compromise, which we can't suspend, which we can't put aside, not even for a minute, there has to be the three considerations at any given time. So there has to be that matter of environmental considerations as well. That's the first comment. The second comment is related to the conditions of commitment. I think we may need to, in the meeting as well, I must say that, where we are going to propose in this meeting, especially with the chair and ESCOM CEO and their team, we will have to help one another to understand the trajectory that we have submitted as a, what is this thing, the INDC, now it is still INDC, Intended National Intended Contribution. That trajectory, it doesn't have a wage cost condition. Not at all. It is something like dependent on or assumptions. Those are assumptions. Now, assumptions and conditions are completely different things. When we say condition, we mean that if this condition is not met, South Africa will not move. And that's not what we are saying. We are a responsible citizen of the world. We are one of the top elites of the world. And we have to do all in our power from our side as well to contribute. We are saying, however, our assumption is that there is a discussion at international level that's taking place, and that discussion, we are sitting on the board of GCF, that's the Green Climate Fund. And the funding, we are arguing that it's got to have $100 billion by the year 2020. This past month, where I come from, Jet, the meeting that you're referring to in Morocco, where the electric cost. There were discussing even a roadmap beyond of funding, of everything, provision of funding by the developed countries beyond 2020. So the discussion we are holding about funding is not only up to 2020, but beyond 2020. At least for now, the roadmap we are saying, let's go to 2025 over the horizon. So it is an assumption, not a provision. Why am I saying so? We picked up that indeed one of the reasons why there was a challenge in ESCOM's program, or which necessitated that there is this filling for the change, is because there was no funding or adequate funding in terms of the offset agreements that have to be signed with the IPP. So on that basis, then ESCOM decided that the condition of funding is not met, and therefore we will continue. doesn't change as the relief department being energy. We also focus on the salary needed provision, possibility of provision of these optic agreements and provision of energy arising from the renewable to be spread across the southern region. In other words, I'm talking about the power pooling. So that if Eskom has got a challenge in terms of funding, we look at other countries neighboring who can actually do power pooling. So it's definitely a thought that some of the thoughts that we're going to discuss. I'm amplifying that we rather also just look at this wage condition, because there's no condition. Because I think from the basis of understanding of Eskom, where they had a wage condition, it is on that basis that therefore there was probably a condition because the condition has not been met of providing a fund. So that's another thing that we need to discuss. I'm getting into just a little bit of formal details. There is a statement, I think, in the report that the South Africa, Eskom program of renewable, I think this was said by the chair, the 100 megawatt production of the concentrated solar power. And as far as we recall, this is again another project that didn't take place as it was planned. And I think today we're getting an explanation of why that was put a bit on hold and because of the cost nature of the cost. And I think the issue that we must discuss here is that perhaps there may not be value for money now, but over the long term, these are, by the way, inherent other benefits that we are not seeing here. The issue of counting cost only is not the only thing. You must look at the other issues about people's health, potential disasters going into the future. You would have contributed a bit further. So we must do all these calculations and compute them in this particular 12 billion that over a long term, you see benefits that are not just about cost and that are about the size of that energy, that particular energy. The other thing is to look at the issue about the storage related to this, and there was also another statement that said that today's, I can't remember which stage it was, just trying to take it here, today's, I think it was almost at the end, there has not been, it's not even saying an indication, but that renewable energy has not made an impact on climate change, on gas. Minimal impact of the REPP program means a zero carbon emitting basic option is required. Yes, we say, maybe just on this one. South Africa has got, and I want to talk a bit about policy. South Africa has got an energy, what is it called? A resource, IRP, Integrated Resource Plan. Now, in the Integrated Resource Plan, if we are still together as country fellow, men and women, if we are still together, we'll always remember that there's nowhere in that IRP where South Africa says we are going to focus on just diversity, the REIPPs or renewables only. We have in the IRP 42% of, up to I think the year 2030, it will be 42% of the renewables. The rest between, the difference between 42% and the rest, it's coal, it's nuclear, it's gas, it's whatever. So we have an energy mix policy check. An energy mix policy. So what we are doing right now is to build up the renewables that are gradually going to be built up to 42% in terms of policy. So when Eskom deals with this matter, we have no choice but to comply with the policy of our system. And it's a policy that has been adopted by all of us until the IRP2 comes in place, which is now in the making. So there's no one who has ever said that there must be just renewables. It's an energy mix policy in South Africa. Linked to that is that we have another policy, which is the energy, which is a policy on climate change response policy. We've got to read all these things together. And with energy department, we are reading the policies together, including the policies that have to do with poverty, or policies that have to do with pollution control, and all those that go with it. So let's learn to also read the policies together, because the policy on Uganda, Treasury, Department of Finance. All those are going together, so we're working together. It's going to be important that we look at all those together with ESCOM so that they can invest together. The other thing, next point, that I would invest with just 2 points. The issue about the South Africa must sign the third, I think Chairperson said so, the sign of on the 3rd of August, yes, on the 3rd of November. Is what we are going to be doing there is a ratification chair process. And it's probably not one that necessarily the order, but signing we've already done on the 23rd of September, signing of the climate change agreement in New York. So what we are going to do in the ratification? May 23rd of May to end. This year, yes. So this one is going to be happening probably before a COP. We are not sure when the process of Parliament will obviously tell us when this. I just thought I should clarify that as well. And then we have already presented our INDC. So there's no any other document. I heard the chair say that we need to still produce or submit another document that will say for certain this is what South Africa, we have consulted, we have presented our INDC. It is on the website of the Climate Change Directorate as we speak. What's going to happen is that beyond now, every country, 186 countries of the world, will then do a review at a time when we shall have all agreed that we are now doing a review whether we comply or we actually need the gap, the funding gap, the emissions gap, the technology gap, the climate change. Last point. That summarize the technology we do understand is still not available, especially of storage. We are continuing to look together with the whole world on storage for the renewables. However, we at our own building, we are generating energy right now during the day solar, all those solar panels that are there. But we are actually pumping it into the grid. There are instances where those who are generating now are pumping into the grid. So we still don't have a crisis now. I'm saying we're not in a crisis mode knowing that say that this generation of renewables, where does it go to? It's being passed into the grid. However, we must look for storages, for smaller storages and everything else, everywhere and throughout, even in rural areas, deep rural areas, where small little villages for 20 houses, but it's up the mountain there, where we can generate through one solar panel or two solar panels and at least store for them somewhere there. Those are the kinds of storages that we're looking for. And we're working hard on the job together with the world.
No, no, available inputs, Minister. Thank you very much. It adds into the debate and the discussion and helps clarify some of the issues going on, even for members, I suppose. Now, just to clarify the process, last week, Wednesday, the committee resolved to recommend to the House the ratification. And I think the select committee is going to do that today. So I've been speaking with the leadership of Parliament to try and schedule this week if they can.
It's on Thursday.
Yeah, so Thursday, we hopefully the House will consider that. Given the discussion in our committee, we don't anticipate any problem in terms of ratification. All parties are agreeing to that. I can speak on their behalf as well. We might do it on this Thursday, so that Friday when we meet in the colloquium, at least we'll have been having a way forward from the House and then the processes can go through. We are very excited about that, Minister, the fact that you had to take this thing through cabinet in the speed at which you did. We appreciate that. But we're also saying that we could have done it earlier, so that we are part of those 22 countries. But nevertheless, the process is going and we are very excited about that. So it's time to engage, honorable members.
Well, sorry, Edward. Chairperson. I'd like to thank the honorable minister for the issues that she has raised and pointed out what would seem to be conflicting positions. We are not in any conflict with national policy. What we are merely assessing is
I was going to come back
If you don't mind, Honorable Dr. Duban, if you don't mind, I was going to give you an opportunity at the end when you respond to the issues raised, also to reflect on that. We don't think it's something that is conflicting.
No.
We think that perspectives that have been shared by the department from the point of view of environmental consideration and the concerns that are raised by ESCOM with regard to the cost. And the minister said there will be an opportunity to engage. So from where I'm seated, I don't see it as things that are conflicting. But of course, we have an opportunity to reflect because it is quite an issue because there are two imperatives here. Environmental and our commitment was the commitment that we made in Paris Agreement and the cost which talks to the immediate reality that is faced by those who are doing pollution, not doing pollution, who are generating. Because we are also going to talk to Sasol at some point and other big sort of polluters. But for now, we thought we should start with ESCO because of this. What seemed to be a change of approach in terms of the renewals, the IPPs in particular. But you did give us an explanation and we will engage and then at the end the chair will then have an opportunity to wrap up and respond to some of the questions that will come. Honorable Edwards, Honorable Khadebe, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable I don't know why I sometimes it's not really a slip of the tongue. Same thing with your singing.
Thank you, Jay. I'd like to engage on the two things on the ESCOM presentation, please. There was mention about on the nuclear, about the oceans that can help cool, etc., etc. So if, from an environmental point of view, I was wondering, specifically now, so I'm mixing two issues, just bear with me. There's been a couple of instances where people have mentioned and there's sort of controversy about the water licenses in Medjugorje. So, I mean, it's well known that the water in and around Medjugorje is being poisoned and polluted, etc. It's been an ongoing issue, specifically environmentally. And also, as mentioned, Medjugorje's emissions are way above the level that are set in specifically the Kyoto, the climate change issue. Okay, so what I basically want to ask there is if the water is going to be used for cooling, etc., what will the implication be on our oceans? Not only the water, but also the whole ecosystem within. Because that's what worries me. Because it's easy to just say you're going to use the water, but it's not just water. It's a whole ecosystem that lives in certain areas, it differs. So my second issue will be, the chair doesn't mention the renewables, and if I understood correctly, you said that it was too expensive in certain areas. Now, with all due respect, but nuclear will cost more than just an arm and a leg. I get that it's more environmentally screening, so there's more emissions, etc. I mean, I can go on, I'm trying to keep this quick. But when you go look, and we've done, well, I've done overtime to not only government, but private sector. So won't it be cheaper to look at, or not going to be cheaper, won't it be effective to a certain extent to look at options, let's call it cheaper? I know you mentioned wind and etc., but specifically where I've seen solar, I want to mention solar and wind, but solar specifically, because you can get, once you get the private sector to put, you know, put back into the grid, there are so many massive businesses and malls, etc., that can put back into the grid, but they're not allowed to. So why don't we look at something like that specifically? Or is the problem the red tape around it?
Thank you. must meet this code and so on, because the needs are attainable. There is no. It may be that that's true, but I'm saying within the energy needs that is accommodated. But besides, the main issue is that if you rely heavily on fossil fuels or some kind of energy that has to bring you with time and it's environmentally damaging, it's a problem, because why we're moving towards renewables, it's also on the basis that that is replenished and constantly there, so it never runs out. Yes, you may have interruptions in between. I think I agree with that statement, but I'm just saying we need to work on that supply policy. But let me raise some few things for both the department and the ESCOM. Firstly, just the department to share with us whether here or beyond this city, the number of which are those aging companies which are those selected on the basis of what criteria did you just say, these are the 80s to start with, and so on. I think that will be fine. But just to ESCOM, you say you have not included the cost of the backup in this one slide, as indicated, there are no numbers, which you said the cost of these backups are not included. But do we know what the cost was going to be? Can it be factored so that we know exactly what it means? Now, in the strategy that talks about the peak, the plateau and decline, I thought you have now factored this thinking, not just a theorizing of what will happen. I thought that someone starts looking at what the cost will be of all that which we need to do. That we agree with the previous argument, we are going to ratify that, we are party to that, we need to have that decline immediately. It should be done. Now, we must start factoring what those costs will be. Unlike the private sector, ESCOM is a parastatal, it should provide leadership in this regard. So we cannot, in as much as the private sector should come on board and we will hear what their options are and so on, but we rely heavily on ESCOM. And if ESCOM misleads the country, the private sector says it's possible and we cannot play in that field, it will be problematic. But lastly, Chair, what also becomes an important thing is whether all of these will be affordable to the poor. Whatever we do ultimately, it's not that government should be able to purchase that, big firms should be able to purchase that and so on. It should be that it should be used by our people in their domestic use from time to time in a sustainable way. So I would be interested in that. We may not have those solutions now or what it will mean going forward, but I think we must factor whether our own people will be able to afford any other product that we want to put into the market. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. So those are the few comments and questions from the members.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Just a few comments and two to three questions. Globally, we are aware that 2 to 3 years ago, oil prices, gas and coal have suffered serious crashes. And in those producing countries, we have seen a dramatic downside of industry. And opposite that, we're seeing renewables thrive. That's what is obtainable now. Now, what I want to ask ESCOM is that from aware that wind and solar PV are now the cheapest new option in South Africa by some margin. And we have been reading about massive investment in the country in renewables, especially the province that I come from, Northern Cape. It's a solar hub. How can the Eskom justify the fact that renewables are expensive? That's the first question. The second one is around, does Eskom appreciate the useful contribution of the renewable energy to the national grid? And what is Eskom's vision of the least cost energy mix to meet our excess energy needs? And what role will the renewable energy play in the mix? The last one, Chair, is around what is not contained in the presentation. I don't see when they deal with the sources of renewables. They only mention wind, solar, but there's no mention of biomass and geothermal. And those two go by as proved to be a source of success. Now, Eskom is about 93 years. It was established in 1989. I know we have taken over as a democratic government only in 1994, but Eskom now is 93 years. It has been there since 1993. Now, in one of your slides, you are indicating that you have to start about zero emission reductions option now. For me, it will be disturbing if you say you have to start now, when you've got more than 93 years in existence, first and foremost, and as a democratic government in 2 years. How do you justify that? Because one will expect a company like Eskom to be actually leading the world, because we know energy production is contributing to fossil fuels. And now, given the fact that you, as an entity, you are one of the highest emitters, how dare you say you have to start now in terms of a zero emission? For me, it's not comfortable. It doesn't make me comfortable. Last year, is how is the current drought, or how is the current affected Eskom power plants that need constant cooling. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Next time we must raise our hands. Very hard to say that we can see. Not much fire. Okay. Those are the questions. For me, just one. This integrated resource plan that talks to the energy mix, to what extent are we still committed towards the plan? Remember, it's the plan approved, which all of us must contribute towards, which we got a presentation from dear on the plan. So that is just my own question. And probably the commitment was the next phase of the renewal, whether that statements that we picked up represent Eskom's policy position, that no takeoff, signing of takeoff agreement. Okay, I guess, Chair, you will, the CFO and the team will then respond. And then you will come in at the end. There are questions, very few, for the department, from the Nkola, from the Makubela.
Chair. Honourable Chair. I think the first question relating to the concern around the cooling of the oceans as well as the impact thereof, as well as the UV water issues. We'll get Mandy to respond to those.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. I think in terms of the question around the impact of nuclear on seawater, I think we have had the fortunate benefit of having Kuwait in operation for a number of years. So we've been doing 20 years of research on the impact around the water systems around Kuwait, because we obviously do seawater cooling there. And we found in the last 20 years that there's been no impact on the seawater ecosystem at Kuwait. There were two small impacts that we found. One was we added biocides to our pipe system so that they don't get fouling of the pipe system with the water all the time. And then there was a small temperature change in the water, but we found that within a few hundred meters of discharge at the Kuwait tank or seawater outlet, this is dissipated. With new nuclear plants, it will be even further away, the dissipation will be even further away, so there will be no impact. So like I said, we've got 20 years of research at Kuwait, which shows no impact. We won't start construction, we won't do any issues if we don't have the licenses, so we do have water licenses at Medupi. And then on the CO2 emissions, as explained by the Eskom presentation, the Medupi and Kusile plants are far more efficient than our existing plants. So their emissions do not exceed what the current fleet emits. And also the Medupi emissions and the Kusile emissions have been included in the carbon budgets that were explained. So those are accounted for in our growth part going forward.
I think the next question related to the cost of renewables, versus the cost of nuclear. The comment was basically, could we not consider cheaper options like solar and wind? Yes, we do recognize that it was outlined by the presentation that the unit cost of renewable energy can decline quite significantly, not only in South Africa as well as globally. And that's a global trend that we see that happen. And it's very encouraging in terms of the fact that have this declining trend. We would like to point out that if you look at the unit cost decline that we've seen, it is on the basis that electricity is only available, as we said, from a load factor perspective, at 30% of the time. So if you are saying that you're paying, say for example, you're paying 69 cents for coal, and you're paying 69 cents for wind. So wind is only available at 30% of the time, but you pay 69 cents. Yet coal is available 100% or 80% of the time effectively, and you are paying the same coal. So from a value for money perspective, all we think is that from a value for money perspective, you would rather pay 69 cents for energy that is available 80% of the time versus 69 cents for any that are available 30% of the time. That is just coal versus renewables. If you then take the debate further in terms of saying,
I think we should point out that we pay for the megawatts that are supposed to be generated. But as you connect to the grid through inverters and all those mechanisms, the megawatts dropped significantly. But you still pay for what was supposed to be generated. I think that's what we need.
And I think then also let's include then the, let's call it the environmental portion of that. What we then claim is that we need to transition from where we are currently at high emitters to low emitters. And in transitioning from high emitters to low emitters, we're basically saying there is a role for the current wind, solar, and other renewables to play a role, as the Honourable Minister has pointed out, in terms of the energy mix. But equally so, there is a need for us to look at, which is envisaged from the current IRP as base load zero emitting options. So from that perspective, that's all that's currently saying, is that if you look at
all the available options. Let us not throw out the baby with the bathwater in terms of saying renewables are the only option. It is one option that is in the mix. And we are saying, as we said, as one of the questions that came up was to say, it should not only be about profitability as a state-owned company and representation of government, it is also about the people. And if we are then saying at this one, that we are saying, what is the most value for money proposal or proposition that we can put on the table as it relates to the energy mix? Because that answers the question associated with the people. And therefore we think we're not completely averse to our commitments associated with community life. We think we support that. Because we have to support the fact that holistically, we don't only have to give our people an answer associated with cost. We have to give them an answer that's associated with cost, environment, as well as affordability. And access in terms of energy security, as ongoing studies. So when we are positioning ourselves as ESCOM in terms of the debate relating to the cost of renewables, it is associated with a value for money discussion, not the absolute cost associated with the renewables versus any other solution. Because our view is that if we look at renewables as much as they have a space to play in the energy mix, there's probably other value for money proposals. As presented in the presentation, we've outlined the costs associated with renewables. Currently, the first power purchase agreement that we've signed for the next 20 years is 1.9 kilowatts. And we made a case where that 1.1 kilowatt exposure has been made affordable by the country. Second, secondly, we've said if you look at cost of compliance associated with the current coal fleet, it's in the region of 1 billion back. Okay. If you look at currently in terms of the research that we've done, benchmarking associated with one or two units of nuclear power, it's probably in the region of 2 to 300 billion back as well. So if you look at the entire nuclear fleet of 10 reactors, yes, it's a massive number. But there's no country that commits to 10 reactors of any one. It is a phased approach that is implemented in chunks, depending on policy and economic growth and all of those kinds of factors. So if we then compare all of the available energy sources, and if we then chunk up nuclear into bite-sized chunks, we believe that there is a case to be made associated with the affordability of nuclear as well as the cost of nuclear to the economy. So that's how we look at the value for money proposition as it relates to coal, renewables, and nuclear as a zero emitting option.
Chairperson, ESCOM is the sole buyer of the electricity that comes from renewables. Yes, this has brought in a lot of investments into the country. However, when we buy that power, it's supposed to be a pass-through. In other words, the cost of buying the power is supposed to be passed to the people, to the consumers. Now, at the present cost of buying this power, it will mean the tariff that ESCOM requires from NERSA will continue to climb through the roof. I think this is an issue that has got to be handled and examined very thoroughly. Can we make a pass-through of all the costs of buying the renewable power to the people?
But you are making one point. The current methods of producing energy have got a significant impact on the environment and on emissions. And renewables, the country package, you are not only considering the cost, but you are also, it's part of the commitment towards reducing the carbon emissions that you are producing. So the cost factor should not be the only determining. There must also be other considerations about the health of the population and the fact that you must commit yourself to zero, what do you call it? Zero emission. So it is those two things put together which must then help to come at a particular position. But of course you are you may have a point in that as a corporation. But shouldn't the information that you have now be packaged in such a way that you then generate a discussion, national discourse around these issues, and not say where you are seated to say, hey, these things are costly, therefore taking in this direction. Because the fact that you see these things as you are seeing them from a perspective in terms of cost and other issues does not necessarily mean that the rest of the country sees things the same way. Because this must be a national view and a national position that is taken. So this just my view to say, check. Many people may understand where you are coming from. But other people will say it's not only about the cost, financial cost, but it's about other costs to the well-being of the nation, as you see them. Because remember, the fact that there has to be a risk reduction of carbon emissions is not just an economic imperative. It's much more than that. And many other countries are beginning to realize that. Remember, other major emitters in the world were not part of the Kyoto Protocol because of the very same argument that it would be very costly, it would be detrimental to our economy and all of those things. But as time moves on, they also begin to realize the impact that is having on their people as a whole. So I'm saying it should not only be seen from that cost perspective in terms of the finances, but there are other considerations that must be looked at as well, which for now, I think, but maybe I must just leave it at that because there is this problem of timing.
Okay.
But I'm not sure whether there were still other questions which you were responding to, and then the chair, of course, will have the last bite from the ESCOM's delegation.
Before.
Okay. The minister?
Before you have the chair, I just want to make a proposal. In the light of the discussion that I referred to earlier on, and the remark that there should be public discourse on this matter, I want to suggest that we get an opportunity to have those meetings that I referred to earlier on, so that we discuss it. I'm reluctant to get into this process. We have a produced document that's response and possible solutions to ESCOM's RPP concerns. It's written by CSIR, so we need to get CSIR probably at some stage at your commission. But at another level, we need to be engaged through DST. DST is valuable going for CSIR on all these matters, and probably the further discussion as compared to that. And then you could also have CSIR coming over here to do that. Because they do speak to these issues of the 30% availability at the time from EBRPP, those responses, and how we can handle that. Thank you.
Okay.
Absolutely. The last thing is that you're right, I think you're right. Whatever we do, it actually, and it makes sense to have a value for money issue, but the value for money must have all elements computed in there, including people's health, including what's the net present value of everything that we do? The consideration of the net present value. For instance, if we say that the value for home and whatever it was, what is the best value for money, renewable options and so forth, you know, all that computation, that we take into cognizance other costs. Like for instance, what is the cost of disaster? What is the cost of overtime? What is the cost of people's health from a pollution point of view? Because all those things are going to be taken into cognizance. And this is what, these are the things that we come into this kind of thing. Thank you.
Thank you. From where we sit, I think the proposal is very progressive, Chair. Of the board, I don't know what is your view. And I think we encourage that discussion. Probably we will step in very early before the discussion takes place. But that's our responsibility. We have committed ourselves to making this parliament to be an activist parliament, to respond to things as they happen in society. Not to wait until the other day when we are briefed, when the issues are already stayed, when the horses have bolted.
Yeah.
So we enter the space at this point, but I guess it just underlines the fact that there must be the debate in government. But those debates must take place acknowledging that in society, the rest of the society, these debates will continue to be entertained. I know I saw there was a lot of articles last week. I was actually reading one on the flight on Thursday back to Joburg, written by one of the staff members there, about these issues which leads to the cost that you have been explaining. But there are other people also who have entered the space, entered the debate. So I'm inclined to agree with the proposal. I don't know what you think, Chair. That probably we must wait for that. But I think after that is happened, there will be a need for you to come back to us. I don't know whether there's other questions other than what talks to the way forward. That's the thing that I've been.
Well, Chairperson, we welcome the Minister's commitment. That's all I ask from DOE, right from the beginning. Before we continue with the next week videos, let us sit down and evaluate what the benefits, what the costs are, what is the better way of getting NESA to support ESCOM through the pass-through through tariff application. All to be done in respect of the integrated resource plan. I mean, that's all we want, and we're very happy that the Minister is pushing for this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll come back to interact with yourself at the formal committee level. But informally, I think you are invited to come to the colloquium on Friday to engage with these things that going forward. I don't know whether it's a question which has not been responded to, which does not talk to the way forward. Except the year one and one of them are clear.
So, I think you're making a mistake. This is our mistake. The Minister has made it proposal. We should have asked our members, because we are the ones who ask for this meeting, who ask the ESCOM to come here to clarify some issues. So the minister made a proposal, we should have asked the members if they view that they think it's okay, proper move. So that we all agree, not like the minister, the chair person, yeah.
Well, I thought I was representing you when I was saying from the chair. I always represent you properly. I don't know why you are throwing bricks at me now. Yeah, so I thought from what I've stated it made sense that there has to be that engagement, but I think the views of the committee have been put across, and the concerns that, and one of the big concerns is that you can't change policy on the feet as you move along, because you need to speak to all the affected stakeholders, have a proper discussion, and then have them as a policy change. I know for instance, from the party where I come from, there is a policy position around this matter. And I've never come across any debate which seeks to change that policy position, except that there's been concern. So I'm saying, when there is a major shift in policy, it is conducted in a particular way. And that's just, I'm expecting that just now, you will be honorable Khaled, not the view of the committee, but I think I've been able to speak on behalf of the committee that we accept the proposal, unless if the whip was to disagree with my summary. Just in 1 minute.
No, Chair, I wanted to, from our side, just in agreement, concur with what you said, also feeling concerned to engage. Yeah. So we did not deliver the point that we for now. It's a matter of its own doing, the collection with one of those platforms and so on and so on. So I think we can act. The only thing that can be said to the Department Chair is that on their own, must develop capacity to be able to assess if they're not aligned on the companies to give you to neutral what they have in terms of emissions and so on. Both times may not be now, but leave that capacity aside first. But do I agree with you?
Okay, as a board, what I want to say is that just need to say I've got a lot of follow-up questions. In terms of the responses given, and also my prepared question. So I will level the way forward is supported by the week, but the follow up question in the next meeting, you might be able to finish.
Yeah, we will engage probably as you come back from Marrakesh. Yeah. Those who are going there because fiscal consolidation has learned that certain things have to be cost have to be reduced, so few of us are going. So when we come there, the minister says let's go with the mayor. When we come back then we have another session. I always seek to represent the community properly on the other. I know that I was representing you well. So I would like to thank very much Dr. Uban and the CFO and your chief for coming. Honorable Mawili says you are very many follow-up questions. So he wants to engage, so we will engage as we come back. But thank you very much for taking time to attend this committee meeting. Thank you, Honorable Minister. So the Honorable Minister is then released, but we still have to get presentation from the Department of the second quarter. But can you give us a party shot?
Well, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Minister, Honourable Members, officials from Environmental Affairs. We welcome this interaction. It's an open invitation to you to sit down and discuss these things, even informally. It's very important that the representatives of the people of this country understand how ESCOM works. ESCOM is an executor of policy. We don't change policy. We merely point out difficulties. that's all. But we need really to have good and adequate time to discover how Eskom functions. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. That's an open invitation for our members. All our members will embrace that and interact in the future with the Eskom. Maybe at this stage, I don't know, we can pray for 5 minutes or 2 minutes to allow for a change over for those who are going to make the next presentation and to allow the whole delegation to leave if they would like to leave. So we'll pray for 2 minutes and come back immediately after 2 minutes.
Recommendations and observations, and then we come back and check.
they can do it last. Let them press it for last. Your agency. No, they can do it in 10 minutes, but do the people for after. I saw these things never say 10 minutes more. They can follow the 10 minutes, can be the one that you get rushed out by the memorial service. You will have 10 minutes here with them.
Thank you so much.
No, maybe then.
Can we come back? There's a latest part that has been distributed. I hope you know us that can save that. Okay. So we would have to go page by page on this one.
Page 13. Well, page 13. Okay, we're making that observation about the worrying concerns that we have about the regress, the path to financial aid. Although it's still an unqualified with matters of interest, but as we have had in the previous meeting that the AG that indicated that there have been no changes, this entity would have received a qualified public opinion. So the last point is the committee expresses its disappointment. I think we must have changed disappointment on the current financial situation, and we implore on the board, because we did speak to the board, the chairperson was on the board, so we implore on the board to prioritize this issue so that we don't get this in the situation going forward. So we get a formulation like that. Agreed,
Chair.
Okay. 14. So are we happy with the report as it is? It contains quite detailed, and I don't know whether we have the level of detail that's contained here or should we be summarized? Are you okay with that?
Yes, sir. I think we're good.
So there is a move on for the adoption of this report. Any seconder? Honorable Nyambi, second adoption of the report. Any dissenting view? then we'll be ready at whatever point to go and debate in the house. Okay, let's move then to we're doing well in terms of time. Let's move to the second quarter report by the department.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I am here with Mr. Jacob Udu, who is the Acting Chief Director of Business Performance Management in the department.
Who's that?
Jacob Udu, Chief Director of Business Performance Management in the department. I'm trying to look around, Chair.
I'm not sure if
Mr. Obet Baloyi, who is from the Chemicals and Waste Branch, is also a new face here. We also have then secured investors for our
transfrontier conservation areas per plane. In terms of managing our skills in the department and diversity of our workforce, we have achieved all our targets or exceeded our target, mainly in terms of vacancy rate, which we have set at 9.8, we currently at 5.5. We have also looked at the skills issues and implemented 50% of our work skills plan. In terms of our employment equity targets, Chair, the A1 area, I think, which we consistently spoke about and indicated that chances are, even by the end of the financial year, we will not be able to meet, is around women in senior management positions. If you would recall, members, we indicated in this regard that even if we were to fill the very few vacancies at senior management level with women in this year or next year, chances are we still will not be able to make that target. So, Chair, maybe our only resolution would be to try and ask the gentleman to resign if we are to meet that target. On the other area, which is around the security of our buildings or a conducive working environment, we conduct or we get steps to conduct a security risk assessment of our buildings every 2 years, and then they give us recommendations that we then need to implement. The challenge with these recommendations, and some of them would be the responsibility of public works, or even in our case where we are in a PPP agreement, it's the third party that's responsible for some of these recommendations. So we had challenges in being able to implement all the recommendations. Some were structural issues which would require a lot of investment into trying and resolve that. We are looking at those, and we have looked at other options of trying to mitigate the risk without necessarily changing the structures that we have. We seem to continue with challenges around the master systems plan. Members would recall that I think every time we come here there seems to be challenges on our master systems plan. And we consistently review that plan. The challenge we had is the plan is actually a 5-year plan. So when you're looking at an IT plan that's a 5-year plan and there's consistent changes, we always refocus and reprioritize some of the things. So the decision that we've taken this year is we should actually go back to the drawing board and amend that plan and try to ensure that our plan becomes more available, a 3-year plan, not a 5-year plan. So that's the corrective measure in terms of that one. In terms of our dissemination of information, we met our targets there in terms of statements and opinion pieces we've issued. Also in terms of communication events, which include the Ministerial Public Participation Programs, we have achieved and exceeded our targets in some of those areas, and we continue to produce the publications and distribute those. When we're looking at environmental awareness activities, which look basically at the learnership that we have, we've achieved that, and we've also managed to train 73 teachers on environmental competencies, which is an exceedance of the target that we had in that regard. Moving on, Chair, to sector skills plans that have an environmental focus, our intention was to ensure that we do have consultations and engagements with CETAs to ensure that they incorporate these environmental focus, and that has been achieved. Our other area of focus is around training or integrated environmental management training sessions that we conduct per year, and we have been able to do induction training sessions, the refresher courses, and we have had environmental assessment practitioner seminars that we also conducted in the second quarter. In terms of municipal or councillors that we train on waste management issues, we have developed a training manual in this regard. This area, Chair and members, links to the next indicator, which looks at the implementation of the local government support strategy. While we have achieved our target in terms of developing the training manual, we had to have a bit of a refocus in terms of our training due to the local government elections. We needed to do retraining of councillors, and as a result, we now in the process of reviewing the plan just to align with the new demand, because there are some activities that we do not undertake as we had to refocus and ensure that we train new counselors. We've met our target in ensuring that we have a policy interface system in place, and at the moment we are still doing the advocacy work around this, and we've been able to do that. On the number of environmental sustainability research projects being commissioned in the second quarter, we wanted to then.
Change the initially agreed approach to allow you to focus on the yellow. Is that the yellow?
The yellow and the red.
Because the pages are too many and you don't have enough time. I hope members agree to that. Alright, let's do that.
Okay.
Say, why man always changes?
Thank you.
We did not fully meet our second quarter target when we're looking at environmental information and knowledge management tools that we're developing and implementing. What we basically wanted to do is we wanted to finalize the geoportal system. In the second quarter, we wanted to have developed and also completed the testing of the system. We have developed, we have tested, but we haven't fully completed the testing because there were challenges that we picked up during the testing phase, so we needed to recommission some of the elements of it, and testing is therefore continuing. But this is not a challenge, we should be able to meet our annual target as part of the process. The next area where there is challenges in meeting our targets is on mandatory international reports that we prepare and submit within time frames. And the one that had challenges is the third national communication. We were planning to have the first order draft finalized by the second quarter, but we were not able to finalize that. There were delays in responses. We then published this for the responses or in comments, and there were delays in getting that input, which then pushed out the time that by the end of the second quarter, we had not finalized that. And that is then program one share. Those are the only, in total, eight areas where we were not fully on target, but as I've indicated, in most of those areas, we're not worried that it will impact on the annual target. We should still be able to achieve our annual target in those regards. In terms of program two, the first indicator that we did not meet is an indicator where we're very ambitious ourselves, because we're looking at our own enforcement, administrative enforcement actions resulting in compliance, and this means compliance by industry. So we do our part in terms of enforcement actions, and then we need to then monitor whether industry has complied, and in this case we found that the level of compliance is still below what we had targeted to do. So we are within the department still trying to engage with relevant industry to try and push up compliance. The other area where the target was not met is around the integrated rhino management strategy. You would recall we do have a rhino management strategy, but the issue here was to then have an integrated one also looking at the justice or trust so that we then have one integrated strategy. We needed to get a service provider and also secure funding for this process, and there was a delay in securing that funding, but eventually at the end of the quarter we were able to source and secure funding through the Peace Park Foundation, and we believe that we should be able then to finalize this by the end of the third quarter. The other area, Chair, where we are totally off target, and the challenges here are really internal. I always worry when I have to talk about internal challenges. I think the committee has always indicated that if we're talking about our own processes and delays in the department, those are then not acceptable. But in this regard, Chair, what we have done is we have then consulted with SANB and Rural Development to try and fast track this, and we are confident that by the end of the financial year we should be able to achieve the target that we have. In terms of the electricity
corridors and site protocol that we plan to have gazetted by the end of the second quarter. We were not able to then gazette this, but we did get the draft gazetting notice in place, and the site protocols are available. We are still consulting internally on those before we then gazette them. And in a nutshell, then for program two, Chair, it means on three areas where work was in progress, there is that one area or that we were totally off target, but we are confident that we should be able to meet the target. In program three, Oceans and Coasts, where we're looking at ocean and coastal management strategies and plans that we're going to develop and implement. We had a target that looked specifically at compiling a report on applicability of existing natural environment guidelines. This work, Chair, was also delayed. There was a late start in the project, but in September we then had an engagement with the service provider to try and prioritize and look at the deliverables and try and get mechanisms to then fast track the completion of the reports, and we do have an undertaking that three planned reports will be completed before the end of the financial year, so we're not worried about that one as well. The other area which has been a bit of a challenge for us has been around the identification of indicators of marine protected areas and also prioritization of these indicators. This work, Chair, we were doing in collaboration with multiple stakeholders, and one of these stakeholders were the universities, and there have been challenges with getting participation from the universities for the engagement that we had. So we've had, and they have not been available to attend these sessions that we had, which then led to a delay in achievement of our targets. And the next area, Chair, which is the finalization of the South African Site Implementation Plan for the International Indian Ocean Expedition, the challenges are the same. It's around partnerships with the universities and the challenges that the universities have at the moment, which make it almost impossible. They are not coming to the meetings, they are not producing the reports that we expected from them, which then delays our own deliverables. In terms of the estuary management plans, we were looking at three estuary management plans that we need to develop and that we need to do. It is the Buffalo's one, the Swapiatis one, and for those we have appointed a service provider as per the plan, but for the Richards Bay one, there were delays in appointment, but the appointment has since been finalized and we should be able to meet our targets going forward. So in a nutshell, for program three, only three milestones were slightly behind schedule and we should be able to catch up on those. In terms of program four, which is climate change and air quality management, the first area where we have a target and a challenge on is around the submission of a pollution prevention plan. And this area, Chair and members, is an area that we are reviewing, because even the annual target we will not be able to achieve in this regard. There were delays in promulgation of the greenhouse gas reporting regulations, which made it a compulsory to report, basically, and if that had not yet been promulgated, then industry is not forced to then report or give us the pollution prevention plans, and as a result, they are not then submitting those, and up until the reporting regulations are promulgated, we will not be able to get those reports. So we are reviewing the annual target in that regard because of those changes in the environment. In the second area, which looks at the number of climate change response policy interventions, where we needed to finalize data collection and analysis in the second quarter, there were delays in that regard. There was a decision that was taken earlier on to delay this study. However, we now are commencing and continuing with the study, but this cannot happen. The work in this area will also not be completed in this financial year, and we have then made a request to Minister to consider this for review in this financial year, Chair. Moving on to the next area, which was about the framework for reporting on greenhouse gas emissions by industry, where we also needed to compile a report. By the end of the second quarter, we wanted to ensure that the greenhouse gas inventory data collection has been facilitated, and it has been facilitated for waste. However, we have not gotten to data collection for energy and industrial process production in these sectors. The challenge that we had here, Chair and members, I think was around resignations that we had in the department for the key people that were responsible for this area of work. However, we are now reprioritizing, and we've moved structures around to try and see if we can catch up with this area of work. In terms of the next program, which is biodiversity and conservation, the area where we are not fully on target is where we are assessing the management effectiveness of our protected areas. So we then have a minimum score that the fully effective protected areas must meet, which is 67%, and our target was to ensure that at least 88% of our protected areas meet that minimum score of 67%. We are sitting at about 72% of those meeting that minimum score that we have. So there's about a 15% miss of that target. I think, Chair, what I need to then demonstrate in this area of work is there has been a bit of a review on the assessment tool itself, which we have brought in new measures that some of the protected areas were not looking at previously, which is basically why we have missed the target, but we're looking at assisting them to improve effectiveness in those areas so that we are able to meet the target going forward. In terms of benefit sharing agreements that we were to conclude in this financial year, we are looking at concluding a total of 5 in the financial year, but we have only looked at one that is being reviewed. The arguments, most of them were submitted through to Minister, but there is extensive consultations on those, and therefore they have not yet been finalized, and we are waiting a decision on that. That's why there is a delay in that area, not that the work has not happened, the late work in that regard has happened. So that's the only area that's off target, and the other one was work in progress in Program 5. Program 6, Chair. In terms of Program 6, when it comes to our full-time equivalents and our work opportunities, we have not met the targets there. Chair, I must illustrate and then share with the committee that the data that we have at the moment is preliminary data, because the systems will only close at the end of this month for us to be able to capture all the data in this regard. So this is preliminary data, the ISCO data that sits outside the system that has not been captured in this regard. But that being said, you will also be aware that this is an area where we have missed the target even in quarter one, especially specifically on the full-time equivalent. And we probably, even if we catch up on these ones, the specifically on full-time equivalents will not be able to meet our annual target due to the late start of projects. Full-time equivalents work on the basis of 250 days that people work. So if you miss out on days and projects start late, it has an impact on you achieving the target of full-time equivalents in that regard. But the work opportunities, we're confident we should be able to achieve. achieve those. In terms of apprentices training days, I spoke briefly now about late start of project. If project starts late, then you also have fewer people to do the training on, and then we're catching up on training people who should be able to achieve the target going forward. But at the end of the second quarter, we had not met the target. In the first quarter, we did indicate as well that we were not yet not made much progress because at that time, most of the projects had not commenced. In terms of youth benefiting from the youth environment services, the challenge that we've had in this one, Chair, which might necessitate a review, is around the budget cut that we've experienced in this regard, and this has had an impact on us being able to then offer opportunities to more young people in the program. Our other targets, where we did not meet targets, is around kilometers of accessible coastline that we would have cleaned. We did not meet our target there. Our target is about 2,000 kilometers square, and we are actually did about 1.9 kilometers. And we are continuing with cleaning and throughout the year, and we should be able to achieve our annual targets in this regard. On a target around number of environmental monitors trained and deployed, we do have monitors that we will then deploy in October, which should enable us to achieve our annual target. You know, Chair, that the target set quarter one to quarter four, so we still have the two quarters to then ensure that we close the gap in that regard. It doesn't target for quarter two specifically, and that's why we're seeing quite consistent progress in that regard. In terms of emerging alien invasive species targeted for early detection in this area, Chair, for quarter one and two, we were targeting 20, and we've only been able to achieve 10. And our challenges in this area have been around now the vast area of land that we needed to monitor and detect new species in this regard. But we are now training more people to be able to cover monitors. So there is a climate identification training that has been introduced to upskill the current personnel that we have so that we can move into these other areas. Chair, I think if I am to conclude in 2 minutes, I will quickly, I will just briefly say, in most of the areas where we have slightly missed the target or we are work in progress, we are confident that we should be able to catch up on those and meet the target by the end of the financial year. The areas that we are worried about are around the number of jobs created within the waste management sector. This is dependent on the performance of REGISA and commitment that we have there, and we do have challenges in terms of the jobs that they are then producing, and we suspect we will not be able to achieve our annual targets in terms of that one. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. There's a report from our members. I know that there is still financial to be presented. I don't know whether it's for formal presentation or it's for cognizance, but of course any reporting goes with finances. So I don't know what could be the way forward. What I would like to suggest that two options. The first option is for members to note and to then raise the questions that they have on the second quarter report writing to the department, and then we can then next week or whatever time when we meet start with the responses to those questions before we get into another issue. The second option
is to postpone everything completely, this discussion, and together with the financials, and then put aside about 30 minutes to conclude this before we start with any other business in the next meeting. So which will then mean that whatever questions we have, we wrote it down, and then when we meet, we can start with the questions. So which is the most desirable option for the members?
Second one.
Okay. So, number three, second one. So which means that we postpone the discussion for the second quarter report and the financials. When we meet again, we then first have the presentation of the financials and then have the discussion. You don't have to fly the entire team. You can have those, especially all the issues that we've highlighted. Have them come here and then be able to respond to the question. Are you happy?
Yes, sir.
It's fine?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, the department is fine. We will then adjourn all of the members on that understanding that we try and fashion our time and schedule this discussion. Not only the discussion, of course, just the presentation of the financial. Thank you very much. This is something that is outside of our control. As you can see, there's a beginning to be movement actually. So that's our agenda. Those who'd like to attend the memorial cities, they are free to do that. There's a sitting this afternoon at 2. So we need the sites. Thank you very much. Thank you to the officials for coming. For taking time to come and interact and brief us on this report. The meeting is adjourned.